From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of October, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, lawmakers are targeting rural America for increased access to the Internet. The head dog at the European Union's Trade Commission, Peter Mandelson, is stepping down. And the credit crunch is putting the bite on a mainstay in the ag equipment business. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. In 26 minutes, we'll check the global agricultural weather forecast, and after that, on most of these stations, we'll talk about the application of nanotechnology in the agricultural world. It all happens on this Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report for Monday is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat down 45 cents, $5.95 and a quarter of the settlement price. The March at 6:16 down 45 and three quarters. And May wheat futures $6.29 and three quarters, 46 and a half cents lower. December corn at $4.24 down 30. The March at 4:42 and a half down 30. And May corn futures $4.54 and three quarters down 30 cents. July at $4.66 down 30 cents. November soybeans $9.22 down 70. January down 70 at 9:38 and a half. The March at 9:51 and a half, 70 lower. And the May contract in the bean pit at 9:62 and a half down 70. All of the corn and soybean contracts finishing limit lower today. October bean meal $2.45.10 down $19.80. October bean meal, or rather oil, today at $39.30, down 70 for the afternoon. October live cattle at $92.60, down the $3 limit. December at $94.77.5, down $3 as well. October feeders at $97.67.5, down $3. And the November at $97.80, down $3. October lean hogs, rather December lean hogs, a dollar and a nickel lower at $59.82.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's how the outside markets are trading at this hour. November crude oil futures are now at $87.80 a barrel, down $6.08. December at $88.70, down $4.31. November ethanol, $1.82.2, down 16 and 6 cents. December at $182.2, down 16 and 7 cents. Natural gas trading lower, down 52.5 cents to $6.83.4. December at $7.15, down 49 and 8 cents. RBOB gasoline at $2.07, down 15 and 8 cents. The December at $2.06 and 7 cents, 15 and a tenth lower. November heating oil, diesel fuel, down 16 and 9 tenths of a cent to $2.49 and 2 cents. And November propane, a penny lower at $1.37. October gold futures, green today, up $33.80 at $862.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 697 points lower, down 6.75% on the day at 96.26 this afternoon. U.S. dollar is currently trading at 81.53. That's up 0.93 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Tonight, Ed Kieser says in western Illinois, increasing cloudiness, some showers, a few thunderstorms will arrive. Elsewhere, partly cloudy, lows will range from 50 in northeastern Indiana to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow in western Illinois, cloudy, some occasional showers, a bit of thunderstorm or two. Elsewhere in Illinois, mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms arriving from the west to the east. In Indiana, increasing cloudiness tomorrow, showers, thunderstorms possible late in the day. Highs will range from 67 in the north to 80 in the far southern parts of Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Monday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now to take a look at the commodity markets is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. A lot of bleeding happening today. Kurt, are you with me, actually? Oop, hang on, Kurt. How about that? Are you
hey,
with me now?
Hey, boy, loud and clear.
Oh, yeah, changed everything up. I forgot. Well, we have one little pot here on the board that's not working right, and I put you on one. I had two switches to throw and only threw one of them. But
it's about like when I call for a bargain call. They go, hello, hello, can't hear you.
That's right. Well, today you might not want them to hear you. An awful lot
oh,
of red in New York
terrible.
And Chicago. It was an ugly day.
Yeah, it was consumer confidence went out the window here over the last few trading days. Just a lot of uncertainty. A lot of people want their money. They want cash. And they look at sort of the direction out of Washington and the candidates, what they're saying, what's happening around the world. There's just fear and panic everywhere. And, you know, until we can resume confidence in through here, we'll probably be in liquidation mode here for some time yet, Todd.
Starting this evening, I believe, we'll expand our limits for both corn and soybeans. And unlike the last time we did this, and we were taking a look, unlike the last time we had limit lower moves anyway, there wasn't much underneath the marketplace, and it didn't look like things were going to move sharply lower, but there were an awful lot of contracts, I think. Were they still unfilled at the end of the day?
On the corn, yeah. Corn was huge. Over 60,000 contracts for sale towards the tail end of the day there. Beans, you know, 5, 6, 7, in through there. But when you look at the option trade and try to project where the market might be at the close where we resume trade tonight, December corn's projected to be about 12 cents lower and the beans about 5 cents lower if we resume trade. Overall, the funds at midday sold up to about 15,000 contracts of corn and about 10,000 contracts of beans. I imagine that number went higher here as the day went on. They were able to get more sold. To give you an idea, benchmark, as of their last week, funds were still long about 8,000 contracts, the traditional funds, and still long 130,000 contracts in index funds. And the corn side funds were long about 31,000 contracts of corn and about 305,000 contracts of corn in the index fund side of the equation. So if the index funds continue need to liquidate through here, it could still put considerable selling pressure on the marketplace.
What kind of downside objective are you looking at?
Well, if we can't find consumer or investor confidence in here, you know, the December corn future could drop as low as 350, and these November soybeans could go down to this 8, if not 750 level, before they find significant technical support.
What are you telling producers to do now that they're hauling things around?
Well, that's tough. I mean, it's tough if you were one that did the scale-up selling and bought put options. You should be in fairly good shape, and I wouldn't worry about crop that's left over to sell yet. But if you're one that's not marketed, it's really hard in through here. Basically, the simplest plan to manage this volatility and this risk is if one wants to turn cash grain into cash dollars, go ahead and do so, then replace ownership on paper. That way, if the market does turn around, go higher, you recoup something to the upside. Market goes on lower, you've got your cash grain sold, you've got your money, hopefully in a secure bank, and sitting in pretty good shape. If you're one not wanting to sell and hang on to the cash grain, the simplest thing to do is just buy a put option, put a floor under you, and hope that's wrong. So there's several simple strategies you can use to sort of hedge your bet in through here as we go through this fall. But those are the two simplest things guys can do to sort of manage this risk, Todd.
When you're buying paperback, you tend, I suppose, to want to know what the commercial is doing. And when they're buying, have they stepped into this marketplace at all yet, or are they still waiting for a free fall?
Well, everybody's sort of got their hands in a pocket right now. Why step in front of a freight train right at the moment here? We did sell 185,000 tons of beans to unknown destination. I imagine we're going to see more end users come forward and get some coverage. The basis is firmed up on this break as the so-called end user starts to gather some inventory, and the futures drop more than probably what's warranted in through here. But as time goes on, once this selling pressure eases in here, then we could probably return more to a fundamental outlook in the corn and beans versus the fundamental outlook outside the corn and bean markets.
Can you tell me about agricultural stocks at all? I mean, and I'm talking about, for instance, we've got Deere and Company that we'll hear about in the news reports a little bit later, but I checked Caterpillar to see whether they were off as much as Deere is reported to be down. And Monsanto and Bunge and AGCO and Dow, and they're all just lower, and not just a little lower. It's been kind of an ugly week for them, too.
Yeah, Monsanto was high as $143 a share. It's down to, $72 a share. You take some of these potash companies. Potash in general was at $81 a share there just not too long ago. You know, it was quite a bit higher, almost dropped, $245. You know, some of this stock is half, if not 75% below where it was. We had one individual ag businessman in our office here today, and he's in the agriculture business side where he sells a certain product to farmers, and they had some contracts drawn up, went to deliver these contracts to seal the deal, and farmers or producers are concerned and saying, no, not just yet.
Right.
So this put the fear of God into everybody. It put the fear into these agricultural companies, too. So we've got just a meltdown all around in here until we resume some confidence in here. We're fearful this thing's going to stay soft until somebody gets brave enough to say enough's enough.
It should put the a stop on all kinds of things. I would think farmers would not be willing to purchase seed or fertilizer or chemical, or maybe even sign cash rents this early. It's hard to say how things might tumble out on this one.
If you're one wanting to get cash rent, there's going to be a bunch of that available. I visit with another producer who is at a point he's going to have to give up maybe 800 acres of cash rent that was negotiated at a higher level. So we're rewriting the history books here, and there's going to be a lot of major shuffling take place here, because when you figure at today's price, it's going to change a whole lot of the big picture here. Not only that, but guys are looking at not putting the maintenance fertilizer on this year, too. So as far as next year's acreage, boy, that's going to be a big market determiner, big market swing this winter as we try to decipher what type of acreage base we're going to work with.
Well, we'll talk with you again in a week. How about that?
Hope so.
All right. Yeah, me too. Okay. Thanks much.
Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Dave Dickey's here with the Ag News.
In agricultural news, lawmakers passed a bill that could help rural America receive the Internet. The measure calls for state and national internet providers to target underserved areas of service. The bill would create a nationwide grant program that will provide federal matching funds for states to develop mapping programs that identify gaps in internet services, allowing for the creation of tactical plans to plug the gaps. Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, and Alaska rank at the bottom of average speed for internet services in the U.S. European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson is leaving his post for a job with the British Cabinet as Business Secretary. Anne Crawford Falconer, who has chaired the Doha Round Agricultural Negotiations for the WTO, is taking a civil service position in New Zealand. The new EU Trade Commissioner will be Baroness Catherine Ashton, who is not known on the international scene. The recent credit crunch has not been kind to John Deere & Company. The Moline, Illinois firm has lost about half its market capitalization, about $23 billion. And lower grain prices at the Chicago Board of Trade has portfolio managers suggesting Deere sales could falter. Deere stock, valued at almost $95 in April, fell under $40 a share last week. Declining interest in large animal veterinary medicine could soon reach crisis proportions unless the federal government institutes a loan forgiveness program for those who work in underserved areas and a competitive grant program for colleges to bring in more students. Last year, just 5% of vet school grads went into large animal veterinary medicine. The average school debt for large animal vet grads is $106,000, with an average starting salary of $53,000 a year. And farmers and ranchers will be paid $3 an acre for opening CRP land to public activities, including hunting and fishing. The goal is to double public access on CRP acres to 7 million by 2013. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. In our Harvest Hour edition of that program today, that's the second half hour of the program, on most of these radio stations, we'll take up the subject of nanotechnology and its applications in agriculture. Stay with us for the second half hour of the program if you can. If you want to, you can listen to it again, or for the very first time if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. We'll post the program not long after we finish up this afternoon. You can always go get our agricultural programming anytime you'd like at willag.org. Now up next, you know, the USDA ARS, that's the Agricultural Research Service, scientists stationed here at the University of Illinois, are instrumental in the fight against invasive species. I'll have more on how they're working to control garlic mustard in the nation's natural areas. Garlic mustard is a biennial plant. That means it only lives for 2 years. But this transplant to the United States from Europe has been invading the woodlands of North America for about 15 decades, says weed ecologist Adam Davis.
Yes, it's spread from New York in the 1860s to now 38 states, mostly northern tier states.
It doesn't sound so bad or even look all that bad in the fall of the year, but it's not in the fall when garlic mustard smothers the floor, or in this case, the flora, of a forest.
It comes up first in the spring. It's very cold tolerant and forms a dense canopy and shades out native species. It also conducts chemical warfare against them with something called allelochemicals and poisons the other plants and just completely takes over the forest floor.
The European invader destroys the diversity of plant life on the ground level. It's made garlic mustard a must-control plant, but you just can't walk into a forest and spray herbicide, or at least not enough herbicide to do the job. That's why USDA ARS has commissioned folks like Adam Davis at the University of Illinois to search out biological controls. It takes a lot of science and a lot of math.
Well, what you do is you basically poke the life cycle. You take different transitions between life stages, and you say, if I change the survival of seedlings to the immature adult stage by 50%, what happens to overall population growth rate? And you do this for each of the life stage transitions, and what you find is some of those transitions are much more sensitive than other transitions, and so we try to basically find the Achilles heel of the plant.
And the answer to the question that math and science and the USDA ARS U of I ecologists found was to reduce rosette survival.
Garlic mustard is biennial. The first year, the seedlings emerge and they grow into these what are called basal rosettes. It's kind of a low-growing just a few leaves form the plant. The next year, that rosette bolts and forms about a foot and a half to 2 foot tall adult that has lots of seeds on it. Sheds the seeds, dies, the cycle starts over again.
Kill the rosette and the cycle ends a year before the seed can be shed. And that can be done with a weevil that feeds on the rosette. Right now, it is in quarantine at the University of Minnesota, but it's the work at Illinois that put this biological control agent on target. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of the University of Illinois. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market is Brian Stark of the Andersons, right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Lots of panic on the other end of the telephone lines today.
Well, I think just more curiosity, wanting to know why the market continues to bleed. And people are concerned, but yet again, nobody's really wanting to sell at these levels. I think we've fundamentally and technically probably gone beyond what anybody thought we would do. And until the world crisis from a credit standpoint and financially straightens itself out and causes the funds to stop panic selling, unfortunately, the bleeding could continue.
The bleeding could continue, and are you guys okay there at the Andersons, you think?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I mean, it's it's business as usual. I think obviously it's a little disheartening because it's a little bit tougher this year looking out and trying to find the bushels, because I think a lot of extra space was built. I think the farmer is looking for a home and he's not ready to sell it yet. He's convinced things are going to turn around. I've had numerous people tell me today that at these levels we're below the cost of production for 2009. So obviously they're really concerned going forward. But they're not willing to let loose of that grain yet.
Yeah, how's storage going to hold up? We're going to have a lot on hand.
I think we're space-wise, we're pretty well set for a pretty bumper crop if it continues to be as good as the early yields have come out. Now, we've seen 200 to 225 corn from the first bit that's been harvested in central Illinois, but it's such a small percentage because the corn's taken so long to dry down that it's really hard to tell. But I think from a space perspective, there is going to be quite a bit of space and room for this the crop we're going to see.
Producers really aren't moving in this area very much, at least for corn yet. Two or three days worth of rainfall or something like that coming up. When do you think they'll start into the corn?
I think corn, we're starting to see it dry down into the low 20s now. I've got a handful of guys that have been bringing some in, believe it or not, below 20 and the 18% range. So I think in another week, by the weekend or the first part of next week, there'll be a lot of guys getting into corn.
And finally, what are your bids for the day?
Today we are 379 cash corn, January's 397, cash soybeans 877, January 878.
All right, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Brian Stark. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist at the radio station, will join us. That's WYLL radio station, to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. And then we'll talk about nanotechnology this afternoon during the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. That's the second half hour of the program on most of these radio stations. So stay with us and pull over, take a little nap if you happen to be out there. Rest up if you're on the machinery.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin and his Republican challenger, Dr. Steve Sauerberg, are squaring off in their first debate. The two are scheduled to appear on WTTW Television's Chicago Tonight program. The debate is a segment of the one-hour show. Sauerberg is a physician from the Chicago suburbs, and he faces an uphill battle to try and unseat Durbin, who's the Senate's second highest-ranking Democrat. Later this week, Durbin and Sauerberg will meet in a radio debate Thursday at Knox College in Galesburg, sponsored by the Illinois Radio Network. Polling places in Illinois and Indiana will be quite full of registration numbers, or any indication. On this last day to register in Indiana, more than 4.4 million Hoosiers have already taken the opportunity, an all-time record. Illinois voters have one more day, though a grace period will be available for another 2 weeks, the difference being those who register in the grace period will only be able to vote by absentee ballot. Champaign County Clerk Mark Sheldon says about 1,000 absentee ballots have gone out from his office so far. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says federal officials can learn something from Illinois and 10 other states about how to help struggling homeowners. Madigan's office and California officials have negotiated a national $8.7 billion settlement over deceptive mortgage practices with Bank of America that will help tens of thousands of borrowers modify risky loans. For Illinois, Madigan says it would mean about $185 million in loan modifications. Illinois initially sued California-based Countrywide Financial over its loans, but settled with B of A because they acquired Countrywide this summer. People who get caught with less than 10 grams of marijuana in the city of Urbana face criminal prosecution now, but police in Champaign have the option of assessing a fine instead of the criminal case, and Urbana City Council members are being asked tonight to allow the same thing. The city attorney, Ronald O'Neill, says a $200 fine for possession would give police one more tool in dealing with minor marijuana possession incidents. Several other Illinois cities also have that fining option. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. The folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago are away from the office this afternoon, but our own chief meteorologist at WILL is on hand to help us discern what might be coming up in this week for the harvest across the Midwest. Hi, Ed. Thanks for filling in.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
What do you see?
Well, I see weather for the middle part of the week, and then it looks like we'll dry out again later in the week. Weather system is approaching from the west for the middle of the Corn Belt, Illinois and Indiana. It appears that showers will be arriving in western Illinois around daybreak tomorrow and spreading eastward across Illinois and into western Indiana as we go through the day tomorrow and then across the rest of Indiana, arriving in the rest of Indiana tomorrow evening. And then there will be a period probably a little less than 24 hours, but around a 24-hour period where there will be on-again, off-again rain. For western parts of the Corn Belt, the rain comes a little earlier. For eastern parts of the belt, a little later than the time I just described. Most locations will get rain, but the heaviest rain will be in the Ohio Valley, southern parts of the Midwest, where some places could get more than an inch. I think northern parts of Illinois and Indiana and many locations will get less than a quarter of an inch out of this round of rain. And in the middle, the heart of our listening area, between a quarter of an inch and a half an inch, probably likely.
And then if you take a look at some of the rest of the global growing regions, have you been following how things are setting up in South America or what the Chinese crop might be like?
Well, I've been looking at South America lately, and basically the rainfall over the last couple of weeks has been plentiful in southern and central production areas of Brazil. So going into the season there, the planting season, there will be plenty of moisture in the ground for many of the production areas of Brazil. Argentina has been drier, although some showers have occurred at times, and they also have the wheat growing there. It's a little dry and a little struggle in some locations for getting enough moisture. As far as the corn and bean planting, though, it shouldn't be of great concern just yet because it's still very early, and we often see dry conditions in Argentina coming out of their winter and into the spring.
Any other things around the globe that we need to be keeping track of at this point?
Well, back to the U.S., I'll just mention that as we go into next week, there's quite a variety of output from the computer models, and the U.S. GFS model, again, seems to be printing out some weird things, so I would not put all my money into that. For those that are looking at models on their own, keep in mind that GFS may not be where it's at. So as we go through this weekend, it looks like it's going to be dry and mild over much of the Midwest Corn Belt. We could get into some rain next week. Right now, we don't yet see the big freeze coming our way. Those in the northern plains will have to start watching a little more carefully for that as we go into mid-October. But thus far, it looks like we're going to stay on the mild side of that and some more decent harvest weather coming after the rain we have the middle of this week.
Ed Kieser, Chief Meteorologist at WILL, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And we appreciate Ed filling in this afternoon for the folks at Chesapeake Energy. We'll say goodbye now to a few of our listeners on some of the radio stations. For the rest of you, stay put, because we'll continue with our Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report this afternoon. We'll talk about nanotechnology. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to check in on the financial markets. Dave Brown at William C. Burnside & Company in Danville is on the line with us this afternoon. Dave, how are things holding up in New York and other parts of the globe?
Well, Todd, it's not holding up very well. We were down over 800 points at one time today on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, with the volume on the downside huge over the upside. But currently we're down 467.93 on the Dow at 9857.45, with the New York Stock Exchange volume of 6.6 billion shares. S&P 500 down 53 points at 1,046.06. Well, NASDAQ is down 101.44 at 1,845.95 on a NASDAQ volume of 2.9 billion shares. And the 10-year Treasury bond is at 3.42%. Looking at some of the numbers on Wall Street, advances over declines by a 9-to-1 margin both on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. And we've had 1,644 new lows and two new highs on the New York, with 1,119 new lows and four new highs on the NASDAQ. Down volume is dwarfing the up volume, 1,703 to 1, with the down volume on the NASDAQ at 2,601 to 103 million shares on the NASDAQ. So just a down day. Once again, the Dow down 467.93 at 9857.45, and the S&P 500 down 55.88 at 1043.35. This has been David Brown at William C. Burnside and Company in Danville, Illinois, returning you to WILL.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. The Harvest Hour edition this afternoon. In studio with us is Irfan Ahmed. He is a nanotechnology specialist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and based in the Department of Agricultural and Biological Engineering in the College of ACES. That's the Agricultural College on campus. Thanks for joining us this afternoon to talk about we small things. I suppose maybe, Irfan, what we should discuss first is just exactly what nanotechnology might be.
Well, thank you for having me. And just an add-on that I have a joint appointment both with the Agricultural and Biological Engineering and also with the Center for Nanoscale Science and Technology, which is based at the College of Engineering as a campus-wide entity. So regarding nanotechnology itself, I mean, you explained it each time. Basically, we're talking about 10 raised to the power minus 9, which is 1 billionth of a meter. And so if you were to visualize it, you would see a nanoparticle compared to a basketball. And then as you would compare a basketball to an Earth, so that's your visualization scale in terms of the nano size. So the nano size as compared to a basketball will be tiny, tiny, ultra small. So this is basically the science. It's a size scale. And then how you go about making your devices and products and materials, and that is what this nanotechnology is all about. So basically, a bottom-up approach or a top-down approach.
Yeah. So you have these very, very small particles or building blocks that, in size scale, like, as you say, are as a basketball would be to the size of the Earth, and then you have to manage to make things out of them, or you can use those to make things out of them. These are very stable little blocks, and what do they look like?
So say, I mean, say like the, some of the discussions that we had earlier had about like buckyballs. So buckyballs are like carbon fullerenes. I mean, it's named after fullerene, after the guy, Buckminster Fullerene, Fuller. And fullerene was named in 1985 about Rick Smalley at Rice University and several others discovered these. And so these are stable C60 carbon made out of graphite. The way they are structured is they are hollow spheres, and then those are called the buckyballs. And then there are the carbon nanotubes, which are more cylindrical in nature, and then they are planar in nature. So each one of them have a different application. So you can go about building them or using them. Say in case of a carbon nanotube, you could basically work with them to use it with antibodies or other cellular structure enzymatics, so that for detection or diagnostic purposes. Or you could use it, you use the nanoparticles as such as a cargo or as a delivery mechanism, as a transport mechanism. So if you're talking about delivery within, say, for animal health or for human health, so those could be used as a transport mechanism for, say, on-demand drug delivery or on-demand drug delivery or just-in-time drug delivery.
Yeah, so you can build, I guess, little walled entities out of this that actually will follow a set of instructions of sorts. Is that right?
Right. So there is the general understanding is that there's a chemical stimulus and then there's a mechanical stimulus. And so all of these can be brought together, brought to bear, to sit there. And what we sometimes, I mean, you may have heard the term, I mean, honey, I shrunk the doctor, so to speak, that it would go and sit next to a disease cell and release the drug at the time it's needed to and in the dosage it's needed to over the period of time. And so it could be used. You can either encapsulate them or you can coat them with these as a transport mechanism.
And so once you've done that, what are the applications? So you talked about some of the medical applications. What other types of applications?
So here we are today talking about agriculture. So as I must remind the listeners that whatever we are talking about today is about 10 or 15 years down the road. So, but there is rapid advancement and development going on, which makes it very interesting, and we could see some light at the end of the tunnel. So one of them is the nanocomposite materials. So nanocomposite materials are being used in other areas, in auto and so on and so forth. So one of the things I envision is being used for tractors and combines and for making your the pedestals or the other areas of the combine more stringent, more rugged, and more durable and abrasion-free. So one of the areas that you could also use nanocomposite materials could be potentially in your combine cutter blades or your moldboard plow or disc shears and the tines and the like. So those materials then make it more abrasion-proof, and so you would have less need for changing them at a regular interval.
So would you see building these things as a sheet over the over the top of some other composite?
No, you would actually, you could lay it out. I mean, there are companies actually doing that. So in case of, say, like a bumper, so they are coating that bumper with that material, so they basically become abrasion-proof. Or you can make those during your manufacturing process. Now, when you're making all of this stuff, of course, I mean, you have to put in some of these manufacturing techniques have to be developed to do it on a large scale. And that's why there's a center here on campus, which is the Center for Nano Manufacturing, funded by the NSF. And that center actually is engaged in making these tips and inject spraying techniques and other techniques needed for making a large-scale manufacturing and of processes or materials.
So the materials, as I understand them, and I would suspect, for instance, that the use of delivering small amounts of drugs directly into an antibody or into the body of some sort might start with animal science as opposed to human science, right, to see whether it would really work. And usually it's adopted there. So that's one category where you would build a transport of sort and encapsulate. Yeah. But these are really tiny that would be injected into the bloodstream quite
right,
likely, and they'd
right,
know at that point where to go.
Right. So they would interact with your body and would stay there enzymatically, and then would create these opportunities where the drug release will occur. Now, when we are talking about all of these things, we have to be mindful. This is uncharted water that you're going into. So basically, there have to be the toxicity studies and safety studies have to be carried out before you actually go about doing that and adapting it. But you could use it in animal model studies. And then they are currently being explored, especially in cancer cells and melanoma and others. And so you could also, it's the same model, then you could use the nanoparticles for, say, in terms of pesticide and herbicide application. That what it would do is, again, the same model that it will be there and apply it at the time needed. And so you would avoid the drift, the spray drift, and you would also avoid over application of a fertilizer or a pesticide or an herbicide.
So you would avoid spray drift because it wouldn't be activated except on the plants that it said
right, and sits right next to the plant or the weed or wherever it is applied to, and so it will stay there. And then at the same time, you would not be applying you would not have an overdosage of that. And so normally the general tendency is that you do an over-application, and so that to make sure that everything is taken care of.
Yeah, so it would deliver maybe a chemical, or might be able to even take apart an important cell, I would assume.
Right. So those are potential applications where you could use it. Now you could, there are other areas. I can conceive of like smart sensors in terms of when you're talking about you're getting an analysis of the field. So you have, as you spread these sensors, and they would be your data collection tools. And so you would take them and then analyze that data, and you would have a good sampling of your soil, of the health of your crop, and so on and so forth. So what we have to move these things along, what we have done on the campus is there's a good collaboration going on with the College of Agriculture and the College of Engineering, bringing together the expertise both in terms of coming out with larger agricultural biological challenges and then addressing them with potential applications or the tools available in engineering. And so here, like, we have a project going on with the Soybean Disease Biotechnology Center or the National Soybean Research Lab, and working on soybean rust spores. So that's a project that I am also involved in trying to develop biosensors which will be detecting soybean rust spores in the air. So those same models can be adapted for your human funguses or your other pathogens such as E. coli or Salmonella and others.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and we'll continue our conversation in just about 2.5 minutes. We're talking this afternoon with Irfan Ahmed. He is with the National Science Foundation-funded Center for Nanoscale Chemical, Electrical, Mechanical, and Manufacturing Systems here on campus. Oh, I've got that wrong. He's with the National Center for Nanotechnology and Science here on campus, and a member of ABE, that's the Agricultural and Biological Engineering Department in the College of ACES. We'll continue our conversation with him about nanotechnology in just 2 minutes.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Trophy Time in Champaign. With plaques and promotional products to recognize all occasions from athletic endeavors and musical moments to business achievements. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. Additional information available on the web at trophytime.com.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. In western Illinois, increasing cloudiness, some showers, thunderstorms will arrive. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 50 in northeastern Indiana to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in western Illinois, cloudy, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere in Illinois, mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms arriving from west to east. In Indiana, increasing cloudiness, some showers, a few thunderstorms possible late in the day. Highs will range tomorrow from 67 in the north to 80. In the southern parts of Indiana, the extended forecast says showers should continue tomorrow night into Wednesday. Then they'll taper off from west to east on Wednesday into Wednesday night. Rainfall through Wednesday night will range from less than a quarter of an inch in some northern locations to more than an inch in some southern locations. Many places in Illinois and Indiana will receive between a quarter and a half an inch of rainfall, says Ed Keezer. Dry weather will return on Thursday, and that's expected to carry on through at least the upcoming weekend. Temperatures will remain warmer than average late this week into the weekend, favorable for maturation, of course, of the harvest. And the model output is in a bit of disagreement for next week, says Ed. At this point, it appears the temps will remain near to above average, and periodic rainfall is possible. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL, Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, in studio with us this afternoon, Irfan Ahmed. He's an expert in nanotechnology here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We'll continue our conversation about nanotechnology, what it is, and just how it might be used in the agricultural industries. Irfan, when we left you, you were telling us a bit about biosensors and how maybe it could be used to detect rust spores on the wind. There are other technologies that are available, potentially in harnessing some of the corn waste as well.
Right, yeah. So exactly, the colleagues in the College of Agriculture have been working on corn zein. It's a protein in the corn. And so they have shown that it can be utilized for, again, for medical applications like scaffolds and with the for cartilage and tissue regrowth, and with a lot of interest in folks reaching their golden years and with bone injuries and hip injuries and for knee injuries. Those sort of cartilage regrowth techniques can be helpful, and where agriculture can contribute. One of the other areas that myself and colleagues are working on with the College of Applied Health Sciences in this case is using plant extracts for killing cancer cells. So again, using this biosensor developed by colleagues at the Micro Nanotechnology Laboratory, and then taking these plant extracts, herbal libraries from the Indian Pakistan subcontinent, and using them for study of different diseases, in this case cancer cell, and see which one of the plant extracts actually kills the cancer cells, and some of them actually expedite the process, and then can also be potentially used for other infectious diseases.
I seem to recall on the cancer front that early on in the technology, as I was having conversations with people here on campus, some of them students, some of them not, discussions about building small machines out of nanotechnology that could literally go in and take apart, for instance, a cancer cell, or any cell for that matter, and then be able to self-destruct itself so that it would be able to go in and find the cancerous cells, take them apart, and eventually say, can't find any more, so take itself apart.
So, yeah, indeed. And we have another project with the National Cancer Institute, and this one is part of the eight projects that the NCI gave out in 2005, and this university, along with Washington University in St. Louis, is partners in that, in trying to develop these the devices and materials to diagnose cancer and then to do the therapy needed to do that. And so some of those the projects are underway, and we are making some progress. We at this campus are providing the nanomaterial, the nanofabrication techniques, and the clinical partnership is being retrieved from the Washington University in St. Louis. And the other project that I mentioned was a USAID-funded project with the University of Karachi and working on these plant extracts that we are talking about. And so so basically the biosensor, as it's composed of a biological component such as a cell or enzyme or an antibody, and with the transducer, and then any changes which are which take place, then are they are noticed and are identified, and that gives you the identification. So this same model can be then used for some of the food packaging companies are using them for food applications, so that if you, especially the grocery stores and so on and so forth, if there's an expiration coming near, these kind of nanosensors can be embedded within the food package material, and then can tell them that the food is about to go bad and so on and so forth, and so that or the presence of a bacteria has taken place and so on and so forth. So these will be helpful. So there's quite a discussion about, I mean, this into multi-billion-dollar industry. The progress has been slow because of, I mean, because when you talk about human health, when you talk about food, I mean, you have to go one step at a time, and you cannot, I mean, expedite it. I mean, if you were to make materials which were to be used on cars or something else, it's a different story. But when you're talking about human consumption or animal consumption, you have to be slow and steady.
Are there any materials that are being manufactured today?
Right. I mean, there's a website which they monitors some of the emerging technologies, and they list about 250 to 300 products out there, which are which the manufacturers call them nanotechnology based. That means that either some form and shape or of nanoscale work has taken place either in the development process or in the use of that. And so some of them we are all familiar with it. Is your stain-proof trousers and wrinkle-free shirts and the like. So there are nanotech materials already out there. Then there is your sunglasses, which are abrasion-proof. And similarly, I mentioned about the tiles and the bumpers and the like. And so those sort of things are already out there. The sunscreen, the tennis rackets are made of nanotubes. They are lighter. They are more they're stronger. Similarly, tennis balls have nanoparticles in them, so it gets it more bouncier.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon. Any final word on nanotubes before I let you go, or buckyballs or technology?
Well, the technology is moving forward, and we are all hopeful that this university is going to be leading the effort in all of these, and that. But at the same time, I want to say this, that we have to be cautious while we approach these, because there are societal implications to all of these technologies when you are developing them.
Well, Irfan Ahmed, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Irfan Ahmed is an associate director at the Center for Nanoscale Science and Technology and researcher on the faculty, Department of Agricultural and Biological Engineering here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, joining us to talk about nanotechnology this afternoon on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. Thank you for being with us today. I'm Todd Gleason.